Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we on this beautiful morning?
Doing fantastic. Another glorious day to talk basketball with Mr. Metcalf. And as everyone should see in the episode title description, it's a fun one. It's a good one. We always love these. How are we doing, Metcalf? How's life holding up?
I'm fantastic. We got tournament season. Last week we had our most recent No Ceilings composite group effort, as you know, seven different opinions and voting styles and preferences and scouting evals. Mock draft go up on the site at noceilingsnba.com. Shameless plug right off the bat. And that inspired, you know, this episode. We always have fun doing these. It's a little bit of a different kind of pace than just the standard, just alternating picks, going with our mock draft. Because we just did that. So, you know, we're going to mix things up, provide a little bit of a different flavor, something we've done quite a bit a handful of times these last couple of years, that I find really useful and constructive is the mock draft peer review. So Rucker and I both constructed a mock draft of our own, 1 through 30. We made our own picks and we're just going to kind of run through it 5 at a time with our picks, our likes, our dislikes, our analysis, our justifications. Pick each other's brains, challenge each other on different picks and what and why in the world would we ever do that. It's always fun. It's always there are always a couple where it's like, oh my goodness, we could not be more off on that. So I always really enjoyed this exercise.
I love it. I think it's really important. I think, you know, it's fun to do the composite one that No Ceilings. It's also important to remember it is war room style. So, you know, if you're at No Ceilings Plus, you get to watch and see how it goes down. Like there's times I nominate people, I get overruled, the votes sway. And there's times Metcalf does, it gets heated. It gets discussed. So like we have plenty of fans that get very, very passionate about telling us that they do not like the picks, which is always a fun time. You know, I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to post and, you know, good luck guys. I appreciate the comments, but you know, I have a screaming baby. I don't have time to answer everyone's comments, but I understand everyone's passionate and excited, especially this class, but it's also fun to do this exercise with you because we get to say like what we would have done. And then I feel like me and you really start to get heated and tell each other we're idiots. And I also like when, for everyone listening, like me and Metcalf don't share the results until we're on the air. Like, so I'm going to learn his mock order for the first time. He's going to hear mine for the first time. Like, gets really heated. You know, a couple episodes you did Johnny Furphy very early to the, and we were like, wow. So like, it's going to be fun here. We're going to have a good time.
Okay. Easy with the Furphy slander.
Just it was right a long time ago and he was cooking. So like I
understand. It was. Yeah. It was justifiable then.
Yeah.
He's in a bit of a cold stretch. Should we just dive right in? Should we just get right to it?
And right. For everyone, we do a tankathon sim. We don't just do the order. So Metcalf, go ahead.
Correct. Yeah. So this was a tankathon sim. So if you as we go through this and you're like, these standings make no sense, blame tankathon. Not our problem.
Lottery balls.
Okay, so first 5 picks, draft order. We had the Spurs jumping up to the number 1 pick, Portland at 2, Utah at 3, Pistons at 4, Washington at 5. Again, just Detroit Pistons cannot buy any luck.
It's unbelievable how often they drop. And also, I think everyone would be very, very passionate about the Spurs getting back-to-back years of number 1. So,
and back-to-back Frenchman. So I had Zachary Richechet go number 1 to the Spurs. I had Alexander Sarr go number 2 to the Trailblazers. Stephen Castle going number 3 to Utah. Reed Shepard going number 4 to Detroit. And Nikola Topic going number 5 to Washington.
Wow, we're going to have some fun. I also went to France, but in a different way at 1. I went Sarr to the Spurs. I said, screw it, let's get weird. I went Sarr. I went swinging to 2 to Portland. I did Zachary Richechet, 3 to the Jazz. I did Reed Shepard, 4 to the Pistons, Modest Muzelis, and 5 to the Wizards, Rob Dillingham. Yeah. I felt really good. And then when we were about to hit record, I was like, man, I really got weird with like the 3 to 5 range. Love you being aggressive with Castle there. That's also a Danny Ainge special. I just kind of got to Utah at 3 and I was like, I would dare Danny Ainge to pass up Reed Sheppard. Cause he might be like, this looks like me when I was playing for the, but I also think Reed Sheppard and Keontae sound like a very fun backcourt. Maybe you don't start them right away together, but maybe you have a very fun rotation. I could see Utah going in 87 different directions there. but I do like the Castle pick there. Cause that one might make more sense with Keontae, them together. So I like where you're at there. Reed Sheppard to Detroit for you. I mean, it feels right, and I just don't know if they'll do it.
Probably not. I mean, he's almost the exact opposite of every, you know, assuming Troy Weaver still has a job, but Reed Sheppard is almost the exact opposite of every player that front office has drafted, where he can shoot and he's not some elite springy athlete.
Sasser and Reed Sheppard off the bench might actually ruin people's lives in a good way for Pistons fans. Like it'd be really, that'd be a lot of dogs in backcourt coming off the bench.
Yeah. But then, you know, I'm even thinking about, you know, the role that he's played at Kentucky this year where he's been off ball a lot. He hasn't just been a point guard. He's been more of a combo guard. And I think he could really easily play next to guys like Cade and Duren and Asar, whether he's, you know, kind of facilitating with his passing and running the pick and roll or finding Asar on those back cuts or just playing off of Cade and being a just lethal knockdown shooter. If they dropped a 4, I maybe given their track record, a guy like Cody Williams makes a little more sense. A guy like Ron Holland makes a little more sense, but it also feels really redundant and it doesn't feel like it elevates the roster at all, at least immediately. And I think Reed Sheppard would fit in beautifully with those guys. Going back to the third pick with the Jazz, my kind of rationale with Castle was Danny Ainge has a pretty lengthy track record of taking the biggest swing possible and taking the highest upside guys. And with Richey off the board, with Sar off the board, in my eyes, I think Castle is that biggest upside swing where if the shot does come around, he's also taken a lot of prospects in the past who have had questionable shooting backgrounds, and those have turned out quite well. If the shot does come around, I think Castle's the best player in this draft. The defense has been absurd this year. The playmaking, the off-ball movement, the rebounding, all of it, everything besides the shot has been absolutely fantastic. And I still think there's more point guard in his game than what he's been able to show at UConn this year. So that'll help lessen some of the responsibilities playing alongside Keontae. But Castle's also proven that he can play in an off-ball role too. So all of these point guard reps that Keontae has gotten this year, by no means are they wasted, and he's just now back to being a shooting guard. You can play both those guys, really diversify the offensive creation responsibilities, and start forming a really, really interesting backcourt. So that was kind of my rationale with those guys.
No, I absolutely love the idea. If Castle clicks and you have him and Keontae together for years to come, like Jazz fans might be like, whoa, that's rich at 3, but also like if Castle's ceiling gets, if you get to that ceiling and you have Keontae, those two together would be just terrifying and a backcourt to roll with for years to come, because Castle 6'6 with defensive nastiness and the great feel for the game. I love that. You know, it's interesting because I love that you had Topic at 5. I just went with Dillingham because I was like, well, maybe Washington could just like, hey, we get a little bit more firepower. I don't know.
I thought about Dillingham a lot there too.
I thought about Holland to Detroit very hard before I went Bezelis. Like you could very easily talk me into Holland, but at some point they got to get some shooting, and I know Bezelis, the outside shot hasn't come around, but you're projecting that could happen. And I like his positional versatility for them a little bit better than Holland, but I still think Holland's going to be very highly thought of in some NBA circles by some teams, but it's another guy that we hear at a wide range.
Yeah, the opinions with him have just been all over the board. And the highlight tape, the flashes are jaw-dropping, where it's like, oh my God. But the stuff that comes in between the highlights has raised a lot of red flags. Maybe red's a little too aggressive. Some yellow flags, some question marks. Red's a bit aggressive. Apologies.
Yes.
But really, I think he's really going to be one of these big time. What's the context of where he goes? Does he end up being Josh Jackson, or does he end up being Jaylen Brown? And I don't think either end of that spectrum is totally unrealistic.
All right. Okay. Hit me with your next five.
All righty. 6 through 10. At 6, the Charlotte Hornets took Cody Williams. At 7, the Grizzlies took Modest Muzelis. 8, the Spurs via the Toronto Raptors took Rob Dillingham. 9, the Rockets via the Brooklyn Nets took Jacoby Walter. At 10, the Atlanta Hawks took Ron Holland.
Interesting. I like that little run there. Okay, for Charlotte, for 6, I had Cody Williams as well. 7 to Memphis, I took Ron Holland. 8 to the Spurs via the Raptors, I took Topic. 9 to the Rockets, Dalton Connect for me. And then Atlanta at 10, I took Jacoby Walter.
Okay, so a lot of similar names in that range.
We had almost identical names, except you had Castle in your top 10, and I did not, which I love. Yeah, I had Connect instead of Castle, and I love Castle, but I just didn't. The fits got a little weird for me. So, interesting. Where do you want to start? I do like Spurs fans should be very happy with how we projected both picks. Like, if I get one complaint from Spurs fans, I love you guys. I'm usually a big fan of you guys, but you guys have really been busting my balls.
You're feeling yourselves this year.
You're really, really feeling it. Like, it's amazing. I can't please Spurs fans. So if one of these setups don't make you guys happy, then I'm out. I can't do it. I'll never root for the Lakers, but like, I just, you know, come on, go Spurs, go.
Let's start where we agreed.
Okay. Cody to Charlotte.
Yes. Let's start there. What was your kind of thought process there?
My thought is, LaMelo still, hopefully we're getting a full year of him healthy. Brandon Miller, year two is probably going to be a very scary development if he takes another stride and adds some good muscle and has a full off season. So I'm thinking more like an upside swing where you're playing with house money with Brandon Miller, Mark Williams still there. So I would be, that's where I would be swinging to be patient. You're hoping you're taking another step forward with your team and maybe not picking this high again. I mean, everyone could roll their eyes, but that's the hope, is that you're going to improve the next year. So I would be, the biggest swing on the board for me there would be Cody Williams. I know Ron Holland was on the board for me, but I think Cody would still have a bigger, we've talked about this on previous episodes. Like, what are you looking like at your second contract? And I think if a team could be that patient to allow Cody to develop, that's going to be where things are really going to get cooking. So I just thought, you know, go swing. That's where you could swing. And ownership, you know, it really comes down to, you just hit gold with Brandon Miller. We've talked about Castle potentially being a little bit of a dark horse there. I thought about him there because I was like, maybe, but that's also going to be one where, like, Cody's got a huge range from who you talk to. And this year, it's only going to take one team to fall in love. And, you know, with a lot of guys, they could slip because it could be like, well, these teams don't think highly.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really interesting. So I just thought upside swing there. And I still believe in the long-term tools with Cody. It's just going to take some time. What about you?
Yeah, it's similar kind of thought process where if he hits and you have a kind of wing duo of Cody Williams and Brandon Miller, you're absolutely ecstatic about that.
Oh, you're cooking.
Especially with LaMelo at point, at 6'7", and then you have Miller and Cody, who are what's somewhere in the 6'8", 6'9" range, 6'7" to 6'9". I forget off the top of my head, but that's what you want. And I do think Cody is a pretty high field player. I still love the long term. We can't emphasize that enough. The long term outlook of him, the tools are very encouraging. Some of the flashes are some of the best in this class. It's just that consistency, that ability to kind of hunt his own shot, the handle, the ball security consistency. This last month has been kind of rough for him, and he's been bouncing in between injuries that entire time too, and that always makes it really difficult to kind of find your rhythm, find your groove, and really hit the ground running, especially this late in the season when scouting reports are out and other teams' chemistries and your own team's chemistry are really solidified, and you're just trying to find your way in. So I think that's something that really gets slept on a lot. And we'll get to him later, but a guy like Isaiah Collier deserves a lot of credit for being able to sit out that amount of time and come back kind of firing like he has. So I think Cody's going to have a really rough rookie year if he plays much at all. So I hope wherever he goes is they're patient with him. And I think Charlotte would be in kind of the situation where you can't afford to be patient a little bit. You know, they have new front office members. It looks like they struck gold with Brandon Miller. They have a really good young core with him, LaMelo, Mark Williams, and you don't need to rush it. Everyone wants to make the playoffs. You want to, but you can learn a lot by OKC and just being patient and not pushing all your chips in right away and screwing up some developmental stuff. So where else you want to look? Do you want to talk about the Spurs and their kind of collective haul between us?
Let's get Spurs fans on our side for once. So I had Alex Saar and Topic. I went international for the Spurs. We're just going to have a great world gathering for Victor. A lot of foreign relations, keeping up with foreign relations. You had Richichet and Dillingham. I like your combo. Your combo is dangerous. Your combo gives a very big offensive punch. And I like the idea of Dillingham with Richichet's size and length and defensive versatility, Victor, Vassell. Like, that gets fun. That's why we've talked about how much we like Dillingham, but I was getting him in the right place. And that's why I'm like, well, look at where you just ended up with Dillingham and the pieces. Jeremy Sochan, we didn't even there's defensive guys to put around him. So I like that end up there. Like, at this rate, do I think he would last that long? Maybe not, but San Antonio could also be in a position where they're like, well, we're going to go up from 8 to go get him. But also, like, this order could be wild. Like, he could be on the board just because teams are going to be all over the place, and Charlotte doesn't need a point guard, but maybe they're taking a combo guard like Castle and Dillingham still on the board. Memphis, we don't know. So, I like how you ended up. I just thought Topic also was, you're swinging for me. If you got Saar and Topic, you're really swinging.
Yeah.
And you're hoping Saar develops into a fantastic running mate alongside Victor, and you're 7'5 and 7'1 next to each other with serious defensive nastiness. And then Topic is the guy that can make life easier for both of them. You need to get some shooting around him. But I would like that foundation a lot. So what do you think?
Yeah, and I think we kind of had similar approaches where let's take a couple big swings. Right off the bat, identify best player available with high upside who can contribute on both ends of the floor. And, you know, Saar and Richichet are very different players, but I think they both have that, where Saar's a little more advanced defensively, and I think Richichet's a little more ahead offensively, but they both have a tremendous amount of defensive or offensive upside, respectively. Additionally, I think they're all both really kind of interesting fits in that team, where Wimby's the dude. It's very clear that he is looking like an all-timer. He looks incredible, and that kind of makes it really easy to throw whatever you want in that rotation with him.
Yeah.
And I mean, a defense of Wemby and Sar is horrifying. The mobility, the length, the rim protection, it is horrifying. But I kind of have a similar mindset with Risache and him and Vassell and Sohan and Trey Jones and, you know, even Keldon Johnson to some extent. But the length there, and then we get to the second pick, their second top 10 pick, and it's a similar process of, okay, well, they added size, they added defense, they added, you know, some offensive versatility. Let's add some offensive punch in the backcourt. And Topic is the big home run swing. That's why I took him at five for the Wizards, because I think they're that type of team where you can't afford to take that massive swing on the youngest player in this draft. Dillingham, this is one of the few contexts where I'm like, I don't care that you can't defend anyone, because Wemby's covers all that. Risache can cover a ton. Sohan, Vassell, they can all cover for you. So even though you're not going to be a good fundamental defender and it's going to drive Pop absolutely insane, you can still be overly aggressive and gamble on passing lanes and try and go for steals and hunt turnovers and stuff like that a little more aggressively, because you know you have all of these freak athletes with tremendous amount of length waiting behind you. And even Trey Jones, you can pair him with Rob and kind of have a bit of a facsimile of the Reed and Rob pairing at Kentucky this year. So I think the Spurs are in a really fascinating spot. And either of our halls, I would be really, really excited about.
Yeah, and I don't want everyone to overreact about Metcalf going on about Dillingham's defense. I think what you're trying to say is you're drafting him there at that point of saying his NBA skill, we can hide the concerns. We can hide his weakness because of everyone we have around him. The fit makes more sense. Like his NBA skill, which is his offensive firepower,
yes,
really helps us a lot now with everyone we have around him. So that's where I completely get it. And, you know, I have Rob going five. You have him going eight. I could see him going three. Like, it that's the type of draft this is.
He's six on my board. So it's like,
I have him in my top seven. You could talk me into any order right now. Yeah. And it would, I get it. Like you said that on a previous episode, you're like, you could make an argument for a lot of guys to go a lot of places in this. So that's why it's like, we've got a long way to go. Everyone can't get worked up about March mock drafts, because when we start getting some serious intel in the buzz of this pre-draft process, things are going to look very different. It's going to be like, what? Like it almost, some of the stuff we've already heard lately, we're like, excuse me, you have him there? Like it's, people better buckle up. So I like our top 10 so far. Go ahead.
All right, let's move on to 11 through 15 after this quick ad break. Okay, Rucker, at 11, the Thunder via the Rockets, I had them taking Colin Murray-Boyles. 12, the Chicago Bulls, Dalton Knecht. 13, the Trailblazers via the Warriors, Johnny Furphy. 14, the Pelicans via the Lakers, Jared McCain. 15, the Heat taking Isaiah Collier.
Okay, hit me one more time. Murray Boyles to the Thunder, Connect to the Bulls, Portland.
Furphy,
McCain, and
Collier. Heat.
You had Collier. I was trying to catch up, so I wrote the Heat. We're drafting the Heat, so that shows you how behind I was. Okay.
They just can't get enough of that culture.
They're like, can we draft more Heat culture? 11 to the Thunder, I had Donovan Klingon. Everyone can roll their eyes. 12 to the Bulls, Stephon Castle. 13 to the Blazers, Kyle Filipowski. Don't love it. 14 to the Pelicans, Isaiah Collier. And 15 to the Heat, I had Devin Carter.
Ooh.
Heat culture. I talked with the Heat, and we had a very high on our Heat culture ranking. So Devin Carter, you know, feels like a Heat culture guy. I actually love the fit, because you think he's nasty, yeah. He rebounds, and he's going to be tough. So I like that there. But I just love you sticking with your Colin Murray-Boyles heater. You went 12 on our consensus board, and everyone was like, whoa, that's a little rich.
Too late.
And I'm like, Metcalf's like, I don't know. I would have taken it.
Is that where you want to start? You want to start with the Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this on a previous episode. I still love Klingon there, and For those that haven't heard the episode we did, we talked about like tournament risers to watch out for. And I said, we brought up Klingon and we were talking about like, oh, him going to OKC. Some people have been like, that doesn't make sense. Like if you're drafting him to start at the five. And I was like, no. Like I'm drafting Klingon to be depth behind the thin man. And then when you get to playoffs and you have specific matchups, you can roll them out together at times. I still think he's the one that could make some serious noise if UConn makes a title run and start to cement himself as a potential top 10 guy. And maybe that's where he ends up with the Thunder. I think that'd just be a really good depth piece. So, but I also think people need to not be shocked if Presti would be very intrigued with someone like Murray Boyles, because everyone needs to realize like the Thunder, they're going to draft for fit more than ever now because they have the offensive firepower. They have,
without abandoning their kind of core.
Exactly.
Of and, who they are as a team.
Exactly. And you know, Presti's got all these lotto tickets now and he's going to be trying to build the bench. Like he's going to be trying to, it's going to get scary with all these picks because he's going to be like, okay, we've got studs offensively. What area could make us even more dangerous? Like, what if you get Murray Boyles off the bench as your Swiss Army knife four that can defend multiple positions and you put him next to Chet and it's like, goodness. So I get it. I know some people might be like, guy can't, he isn't shooting threes. Presti wouldn't give a crap. He'd be like, upside, we'll figure out the shot and look at the defensive tools he already has. So I like it. I love that.
And, you know, with the Thunder, the Thunder coaching staff currently has, you know, a legendary shooting coach under the name of Chip England employed. So that makes me feel a little better about Collins' shooting development. But in terms of the shooting, I do have questions. I'm a little more skeptical. There are a lot who are just like, no, I think he's going to shoot it. I really buy the shot. I'm not there, but I think he's an elite rebounder. I think his defense is just freakish and he's an awesome passer. So whether he's playing eventually alongside Chet at the four, I think that's an awesome pairing, especially defensively. I think he would immediately help their rebounding issues. He'd still be able to facilitate and move the ball and keep that offensive flow going, or he can come off the bench. And I think something people kind of have to keep remembering is that the Thunder aren't going to be drafting a starter with this pick. They're title contenders. Title contenders do not draft starters in the first round. Yes, I know the Heat just took Hakez. It's a little different. I thought about Klingon there a lot too. For all the reasons you said, as a backup who is playing the five behind Chet, not with Chet, behind Chet, and then with Chet in situational matchups, but 20 to 25 minutes a night of Donovan Klingon, who, yeah, he can't shoot, but he's an awesome passer, just elite screen setter, would make life super easy for Shea and Jalen Williams attacking downhill. Really terrific rebounder on both ends of the floor. I think those are two guys that make so much sense for the Thunder to swing on at 11 as rotation guys, not necessarily starters. Where else do you want to go?
A quick hitter. Why do I have like a cold chill down my spine? Like they, Presti would be like, oh, Dalton Connect could really be a nice wrinkle for us. Did the Gordon Hayward move just swing that?
No,
you know what I'm saying? Like he could either say defensive weapon off the bench, or he could say, what if we got Dalton Connect to just let him run crazy as our eighth guy with Cason Wallace on the court or something.
My counter would be they have Isaiah Joe already.
That's true. Thank you. Okay. All right. What else? McCain to the Pelicans is a great pick. I think I'm getting away from Filipowski projections to the Thunder. I just think also if Portland at 13 had gotten Risha Shea at two, it might be too intriguing to not swing on Filipowski there. I honestly did think about Furphy there. I like your little, I don't know. What else?
And so my reasoning with Furphy is that, you know, that in my scenario here, they took Saar at two. So they have, you know, power forward or center established. They took the big swing. They took the high upside BPA guy at two. So that's kind of established. They have three pretty ball dominant guys in the backcourt already, and Simon, Scoot, Sharp. But they don't really have that consistent off ball knockdown shooter, kind of dirty work rebounder. And that's exactly what Furphy has been. He's in just a brutal cold stretch shooting, and it has been rough. But the rebounding is still there every night. I do buy the shot long term. He's 6'9", legit athlete. I still think he's a solid defender. He's one of the worst defenders in this class takes that I keep hearing. I don't know what I'm missing. Please, please inform me. But I still think he has some really high upside on that end of the floor. And just as like a 3-and-D guy on a team that doesn't really have that yet. They have Kamara, who's pretty much just defense. They have Chris Murray, who's pretty much just defense. They have Ray and Rupert, who is pretty much just defense right now. So, yeah, that was just kind of my thought process with Furphy.
I get it. I also think, like, yeah, if everyone thinks the defense is so bad, it's like, well, he reclassified. His body is very far from, you know, developed. Like, I mean, he's a big, but he's like 6'8", 6'9", but he's skinny. Like, his body needs time to fill out. I think he's just an intelligent player with crazy athleticism that will figure it out if you're thinking he's that bad defensively. I don't think he's like, oh gosh, I can't drop Furphy because of his defense, but I think he's going to be a first rounder and high upside swing. So I just like the stuff he does off the ball and his basketball IQ jumps to me. So I get it. I like that pairing for Portland. I think I like what we both did. You know, I had Risha Shea and Filipowski. I got another wing and some big depth, and you got the big swing with Saar and added Furphy with the upside too. So I like that. And I think Portland's going to be a team where things start falling into place. We're going to really see how quickly things can start heating up for the Blazers when it comes to that rebuild process. But any other names? I thought Castle to the Bulls. Like, I think I would draft Castle much earlier, but I could, there's always going to be a name that slips through the cracks. And I thought if he landed with the Bulls, people would be going nuts. Chicago fans would. But I also liked you taking Connect there. Any other comments?
I don't think so. I just a little bit of praise for Collier.
Yeah.
It's he's been playing a lot better. I still have a lot of questions with the defense, with the shot, mainly the shot, some of the decision-making stuff, but he's been a lot better since the injury. And I've seen some stuff of like, wow, good for him for coming back. I'm like, I kind of think he had to come back. I think his draft stock was like in the tank. I don't think it could have gotten much lower.
Yeah, it's not like Topic status where like if he somehow came out and was like, I would be like, I get it. Because I wonder, I don't want to go off too off track, but I wonder with Topic if there's there is even a lot more he could do to, I don't think he has enough time to just all of a sudden be like, oh, Topic is back at number one conversation.
Yeah.
I think it could expose some stuff more than helping him. Does that make sense? But yeah. I also kind of,
because if he's not 100%, the defense could look a lot worse. You know, maybe
the shot could struggle.
He doesn't get a lift on his jumper. He doesn't have that same burst getting to the rim. Yeah, he has a lot to lose if he comes
or if he
back.
Gets healthy and goes to workouts and looks good. I think people back in top five. I don't know
exactly.
Give me
so
go ahead.
Just love seeing Collier come back and
me too.
Start looking like the guy that we wanted him to be and thought he could be this year. So it's just a really strong kind of close to the season for him. Let's move on to 16 through 20. At 16, the Raptors via the Pacers, Tyler Smith. 17, the 76ers, Tristan Da Silva. 18, the Magic, Devin Carter. 19, the Knicks, Donovan Klingon. 20, the Knicks, Kaishan George.
Wow. Klingon to 19 for you, huh?
Yeah, it didn't feel good. He was the one who slipped. Yeah. I thought about him a lot at 11, but kind of wanted to mix things up a little bit. Thought about him at 12 to the Bulls, but I think Connect's been so goddamn good this year. Trailblazers just took Sar. You know, Pelicans. Okay. Maybe the Pelicans is where I should have taken him, but I love McCain's fit there.
Okay.
Yeah, just kind of pick by pick. It's like just the one who fell.
All right, well, here we go. Toronto at 16. I had Khalil Ware. 17, the Sixers, Tyler Smith. 18, the Magic, Johnny Furphy. 19, yes. What's Missy's first name? How do you pronounce it? I always feel like I'm in my own head.
Eves, like Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay. Eves, Messi. That doesn't sound right, but I'm going to trust Metcalf. Sorry. I have two names every draft cycle. I just can't pronounce right for the love of me. And then I had Keyshawn George at 20 as well to the Knicks.
Sorry, say 16 through 18 again.
Khalil Ware to the Raptors at 16, Tyler Smith to the Sixers at 17, 18, the Magic, Johnny Furphy, 19, Missy, and then 20, Mr. George, Curious George.
Weird group. Very weird group.
I love Keyshawn. The last Miami game I watched, he couldn't get the ball.
It
was horrendous to watch. They literally couldn't touch the ball. Everyone else wanted to score.
They're rivaling that Durant Memphis team.
My favorite text you sent the group in probably like 5 months. It was unbelievable. It is sentence.
Brutal. They're one of my least favorite watches this year, and very little of it has to do with him.
The first time he touched the I'm not going to try name drop, but I watched someone take like three straight shots and just horrendous possessions, horrendous effort. And then the first time he touched the ball, it was like Lewis Scott and Celtic Pride. His teammate was like, I think Lewis passed you the ball. And then he literally took a shot from like 5 feet beyond the arc. And I think it was a holy crap, I touched it. I got to shoot. Because I can't blame him. But I don't know if he's going to be interesting in the pre-draft process. I don't know if he's going to be able to cook enough to get back in the lotto talk, or if he's going to be your upside swing in the late teens that you could hit gold.
Yeah.
He's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be. I think the intel with him is going to, like you said, be fascinating. Because he's one of these guys where it wouldn't shock me if some teams had him early lottery, you know, nearing that 5 to 10 range. And it wouldn't shock me if some teams had him at the end of the first round.
Yeah.
Because the jumper's gorgeous. He can shoot the crap out of the ball. Not a whole lot of explosiveness, rarely shoots inside the arc. I buy the defensive upside. I think he's a better defender than what that Miami kind of situation has brought out of him this year, but he is far, 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 far from a sure thing.
He also, I would love to bet the over 6'8" at the combine for him. And I don't know if it's because he's playing alongside smaller guys, but he looks humongous on the court. Like I feel like he's going to be closer to 6'9" and a half or 6'9" and a quarter than 6'8".
How much of that is the hair?
No, even with when he has the braids, he has the cornrows. Yeah. Him, Saloon, those guys are just gigantic on tape, like just humongous. So I feel like if there was prop bets, I mean, we need to talk to somebody about prop bets for the combine. I know the NFL had them, so we need to get Prize Picks. Hit us up. I would bet the over on that. And then Isaiah Collier, I'd bet the under. But we would have so much fun with that. Come on, Prize Picks, like hit us up. We're fun. Any other names? I like we both went big for Knicks. Missy.
Yeah, I thought
people
about
like
there,
him a lot more. I just don't. I don't know where I would put him if I'm really buying it. Maybe New Orleans if they really loved him. But I'm just not that high on him as like a yet. I need to go back and watch a lot of stuff, but I don't know if I'm buying in on him as like a potential mid lottery to late lottery.
Yeah, guy. I can't get there. I can't get that
high. And I understand some people do because I understand if you're buying into the idea.
Awesome athlete, works super hard, active on the boards, active shot blocker. I think he's just still really raw, kind of in early in his kind of developmental curve. I think there's a lot of upside there. I'm not sure how quickly he's necessarily going to contribute, but let's move on and finish up this first round after our last ad break. Okay, at 21, the Phoenix Suns, I had them taking Tyler Kolek. At 22, the Hawks via the Kings, I had Filipowski. At 23, the Pelicans, Tijane Salun. 24, the Milwaukee Bucks taking Ryan Dunn. 25, the Cleveland Cavaliers, Yves Missi.
Interesting. Going to be spicy for some fans to hear. Okay, 21 to the Phoenix Suns, I had Jared McCain. 22, Atlanta, I had Tijane Salun. 23 to New Orleans, I had Oso Iguodaro. 24 to the Bucks, I had Colin Murray-Boyles. 25, the Cleveland Cavaliers, I had Kwame Evans Jr. I just can't stop fighting that love and feeling. So I'll even say it right now. I think I have Murray-Boyles too low. I'm just, with my big board, I'm waiting before I start really getting into a dangerous territory. I have him in that range, and I'm in still a little bit of like, I need to watch more, see more before I'm starting to move you from my early 20s to when you get in my top 20, you're really cooking. So I'm being patient with that one. I know some no ceilings guys love him.
Stop living in fear.
I'm not in fear. I'm just patient. I'm not an overreactor.
I appreciate your insinuation.
I'm not saying you guys are overreactors. I'm just saying I don't care about jumping to be like, oh, I'm in on him. I'm one of those like, all right, let me make my own evaluation. And I have not watched fully enough. I've watched a little and I very much liked it, but I need to watch more. And the seems like the recent couple games he's had, I very much enjoy watching those. So Ryan Dunn also, it looks like me and you have the same mentality about the Bucks.
Yes.
That is, yeah, he ends up there. Good Lord.
Yeah, I know. It's just,
that's where he fits. And it's like, ooh.
It's like, does he do anything for their offense? No. Do I care?
Do we care? No.
Could they have the best defense in the league? Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you throw out just cycle lineups with him and Andre Jackson, Giannis, Brooke.
Pat that Andre Jackson dunk the other night almost gave me a stroke.
Oh my God.
I thought he was going to jump over the backboard.
His chin is over the rim.
Kolek to the Suns is such a sneaky, like, oh gosh, like if they did that, I'd be like, James Jones, you dog. That's a good little, I don't know one thing. He wouldn't be too scared of that locker room. Like he'd walk in and be like, let's roll.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, so I like Jared McCain there too.
I really, really like that fit. But yeah, and I think the Suns are going to take someone who's ready to contribute early. Zach Edey was a name that I thought about. I just like Tyler Kolek a little more. And I think with him just running point on that second unit and just taking some of the initial initiation responsibilities off of Beal and Durant and Booker's plate where they don't have to do it all the time, just makes their life easier. Obviously, they're still going to be the end target for who you want finishing the play, but I think he's just an experienced guy who can pressure the rim, who can knock down shots off the bounce or off the catch, and play solid defense and just kind of fit in around the edges and elevate the game of everyone else around him. So I think he's kind of one of the few point guards that you can grab late in this first round that's experienced, versatile, and really knows his role.
I think you need to get a guy with that pick that you think can really be in your rotation. I was going through that pick. I thought about the Silva there, and I still love that idea.
I like that fit too.
But I think you need to get a guy there that's like, hey, this is our sixth or seventh guy. This is a guy that Beal or Booker come off the court and we can put him in to play with Durant or, you know, just play his role to a high level. So they got to hit on that pick. I understand also maybe if they go with a big, I still can't buy Edie going there. So if that happens, yeah, we might have to make a bet or something where like I'll get like a Anthony Edwards jersey or something ridiculous. But I just can't. I can't buy into that team spending that on Edie. I feel like they have to get like a wing or like a, nah, it's not Bona, but something like that where they're like, he's going to like Missy. But Kolek makes a lot of sense there. I actually really like Kolek there. That makes, that's fun. So what else you got?
For the Cavs, my thought process with, I didn't love this pick, but I was kind of struggling where to go with it.
I kind of hate, like, I can't figure out what direction I want them to go in.
Yeah.
Every time we get to the Cavs in any mock draft thing, I don't know what direction I want.
So I went with East Missy just because there's been so much rumbling about, you know, do they move on from Jared Allen? Do they, you know, and when I say move on, I mean, obviously it's trade him for a lot because he's so good. It's not to undermine him at all, but just Missy, if they don't hang on to him, okay, then Missy gets to learn behind Jared Allen and provide some additional center depth and athleticism there. I really struggled with it. I didn't love it. I liked your Kwame Evans pick. I think that makes a lot of sense. I have him coming off the board soon, but it was more so, I'm not sure that this Cavaliers team is the same next year, and whether that's they move Jared Allen for more pieces to kind of further build around Garland and Mitchell to convince Mitchell to resign or stay there, or Mitchell leaves. And then do you kind of tear things down a little bit and move Allen for pieces to kind of elevate Mobley and Garland? Or I don't know. It just feels like there's been a lot of speculation of what is the long-term outlook of Jared Allen in Cleveland. And I think Missy gives you a little bit of insurance in the long term.
Makes sense. A lot of these teams, it's going to be really interesting to see the offseason that they have. And Cleveland's right there. Like, let's feel like they can make some moves this offseason, and that draft focus for that pick could be completely different. But we also get to this range, and especially in this year, you can go way different directions. Cleveland also could get to a point where they're like, we're trading out. Like,
yeah,
we'll get back. Like, so
I think they're a really good candidate to, if someone early in the first wants to jump up and they pick up a couple extra seconds or a future first or whatever, I think they're one of the kind of prime targets to do that. Yeah. That's a really good call.
Go ahead. Anyone else, or do you want to finish this off?
Let's wrap this up. 26 through 30. So at 26, the Wizards via the Clippers, I had them taking Kwame Evans. 27, the Timberwolves, Antonio Reeves. 28, the Utah Jazz via the Thunder, AJ Johnson. 29, the Nuggets, Daron Holmes. 30, the Celtics, Zach Edey.
Son of a gun. I had 26 to the Wizards. I had Daron Holmes. 27 to the Timberwolves. I had Tristan Da Silva. Love Utah, that. 28. I had Ryan Dunn. 29 to the Nuggets, Dylan Jones. And 30 to the Celtics, I had Kevin McCullough.
Where do you want to start?
Every Celtics fan listening is going to roll their eyes at Metcalf for putting Edie. And all I will say is that buzz just keeps getting a little louder. So there's clear interest. Take it for what? Long time to go. So I have not watched enough. I need to. He's on my list because it's bugging me. Oh, AJ Johnson, you got to help me. You can't. We usually see eye to eye. We always, every draft cycle, have our differences. We usually see eye to eye. I have not watched. I've not gone back to that well yet because I'm trying to go back to other wells. And I know the well for AJ Johnson. Sorry, AJ, if you're listening to this, we'd love to have you on the pod. I know that well is going to be quicker to catch up on tape because of the lack of minutes he got in the NBL this year. But I also know, I think in the beginning of the year, I talked to an exec and he said if AJ ended up going to Texas, he would be a first round lock.
That's been my case this whole time, where if he was doing what he was doing in the NBL,
for everyone, he was supposed to go to Texas, decommitted to go to the NBL. So
that I think if he was at Texas this year, I think he would be a lottery pick.
Yeah, it didn't shock me. Very thin frame, but he's also 6'5".
He's up to 6'7", 175. At least that's what I was.
Sources on
at least that's what I have been informed. So he's up at least, and this was a couple weeks ago.
I'm starting to get why you've been pumping that a little bit. Okay,
so he's up at least 10 pounds from what he was listed at the start of the season, and he's up like an inch or so.
Is 6'7" with his hair?
I don't know.
If it's with the hair, if we shave him, he's 6'4". The problem is, I get it. He does some stuff on the court, and everyone goes and looks at his numbers, and they're like, he's no good at all. And it's like, oh, okay, guys.
And the numbers suck. Unfair. The numbers are awful. They're so bad. So if you're a numbers fiend, I get it. You're out.
But Usman Jang, the first half, the first two-thirds of his season in the NBL, me and you, I will put this with anyone. I was like, you can't draft him.
No.
And then he finished the year, looked like, what did you steal NBA talent in Space Jam? Like, did the Monstars put in a hit for you? Like, he looked fantastic, and he's still trying to develop, but he's been putting up some good numbers in the G League. AJ seems like a great pick for a team like Utah that is just, and I know there was fans of him before he went to the NBL. Like, people were going to see him at workouts. Like, there's a video of him and like Jerry West and Clippers were there watching. So there's plenty of people that are intrigued with the talent. So I get him going to Utah. I just put Ryan Dunn to Utah because I could see him slipping if teams are like, hey, he's got to be fit specific. And I was like, oh, I added Reed Shepherd and Ryan Dunn to everything Utah's got developing. That seems very fun. So
my case for AJ, because, and if I'm wrong on him, I'm wrong. It's just one
of the hills and one of the swings
that I'm just willing to take.
The fun thing about this year is no one's going to overreact to our boards. This isn't going to be a year where people overreact at all.
No one ever.
Especially
does that.
When they're rookies. Never done that. No one's going to overreact to these. Gosh, well, it's hilarious how these guys pan out.
Everyone's NBA career is determined in their first 15 games. So
yeah.
So my rationale with AJ is 6'7", elite athlete with some real on-ball creation juice to his game. His situation in the NBL could not have been worse this year, where if you go look at the minute log, it is 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 14 minutes, 0 minutes, 0 minutes, 3 minutes, 1 minute, 1 minute, 15 minutes, 9 minutes, 2 minutes. Like, it's all over the place. There is no consistency. He never checked in at the same time, unless he was getting the final 30 seconds of a half, which is, just spit in my face. And despite all that, it would have been super easy for him to just kind of be like, fuck this, man. This is awful. I am checked out. And we've seen a lot of guys, kind of highly touted prospects in the past, who have gone overseas, found themselves in similar situations, and they check out. They disappear. They never get drafted. They don't make it. And maybe that happens to AJ, but he never checked out in any of these games. And he was focused on doing the little things. The work rate was still there. The basketball IQ was still there. The team defense was a lot better than I anticipated, where he's trying to really be disciplined with his rotations and his switching and his communication. I think there are legit tools there, especially once he adds another 15 pounds, 20 pounds. Offensively, he's got some nasty creation stuff. I buy the shot. The percentages suck. All his numbers suck. So if that's going to be your retort, I get it. Whatever. I'm just buying in on the talent. And something that Corey kind of consistently tells us with him is that he was able to see him last year with a playing with and against a lot of the top high school guys who are freshmen right now in this class. He said AJ was by far the best player on the court. Every game that he saw him, by far the best athlete, the best player on the court. And I think a lot of that is there. So I'm buying the IQ. I'm buying the work rate. I'm buying the potential enough, if I can get that type of home run swing at the end of the first round with the extra year of control, I'm taking it.
Yeah, it makes sense, especially the last part you said, the extra year of control. If you're in a no rush situation and you can be patient to have a multiple first round picks and you get a swing after you got your guy, it makes a lot of sense. Like, who'd you had Stephon Castle and AJ Johnson. If both those click for Utah, woo, that is firepower in different dynamic ways. So I completely get it. It's going to be really interesting. Another guy, like, pre-draft workout power rankings would be up there, because they would not shock me if AJ Johnson, if he grew and he showcased, he's going to look very good against the chair. And he's going to be very explosive. And if he's shooting the crap out of it, teams are going to be like, okay, wait a sec. Hold on. Like, 1 year doesn't tell everything. Had some buzz as a high school recruit, which is why he was committed to go to Texas. Like, there's going to be some fans, some intriguing stuff. Anyone else? I love that you gave Antonio Reeves to the Timberwolves. I also, it makes sense to me. Kwame to the Wizards is a really fun, I mean, you had the Wizards walking away with Topic and Kwame. I gave him Deron Holmes and Dillingham. I think we're trying to help the Wizards. We're trying. We're believers. So
Michael Winger, give us a call.
Yeah, Michael, what's up? So I really get that. I like both of those picks. Any other lasting thoughts?
I really like your Da Silva fit with the Timberwolves. I just had him go earlier.
He could go. You had him go to Philly, and I could see him going that high. I thought about him for a lot of those teams up there.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where it's like you needed a seventh, eighth man in the rotation who's just not going to make a mistake and kind of make everyone else around him better. Here you go.
He could go 15 to the Heat and not shock me.
Yeah. Oh, God, him and Hakas playing together. That'd be fun. That defense with Bam, too.
This is why I love doing this exercise, because I find a new team every time this part of the year where I'm like, whoa. It happened last year. We started talking about names. I was like, ooh, and it's always the damn Heat. I always get to the Heat, and I'm like, oh, they could take that.
It's always the Heat.
I think last year we were like, Hakas could go to the Heat. And then we're like, oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm back in on Khalil Ware, folks.
Yeah,
big development.
That's a thing that a person can
that's
do.
That's a thing. That's a thing now. I'm ready for him to hurt me. Like, I'm ready to be hurt. This literally shout Same. Out Michael Scott. Just I'm ready to be hurt.
But the opposite.
Yeah, I would rather hurt by believing in. I don't want to hurt by not believing. So I'd rather hurt believing, you know, if I crash into an iceberg, so be it. But,
I desperately want to be wrong
anywhere else. Gosh, Holmes to the Nuggets for you is a nice little pick.
Yeah. And I thought about Oso there, but you know, just wanted to mix things up. I feel like we've put Oso there quite a bit.
If the Celtics are on the clock and Oso and Zach Edey are there and the Celtics take Edey, I feel like Oso's perfect for them. I just don't get it. But I also get it. What, if they're just like, hey, we're going to...
What makes you so excited about Oso? Because I like him, but...
Feel
I'm not in love.
I think the comfort of his game and understanding, like with him with the Celtics... Him with some of these teams I've projected him to, I think he would understand his role of like play good defense, rebound. I'm not going to be a shooter. They're never going to give me the ball to go to work offensively, but I can finish around the basket or throw some stretch around, floater. You know, a nice floater. I think he just understands how to play his role when it comes to like, you know, handoffs, playing like flashy playmaking. He could just be good with the two-man game. And why I'm so high on Oso is because I think when you get to a certain point where you need depth, like he might be a perfect depth addition for just years to come. And you know, we projected him, I think, at the no ceilings composite one to go in the second round to the Blazers. And I was like, oh, that'd be a fun fit for, you know, someone like him and Scoot, or him and Shaedon Sharpe would be fun. But I just could see some team in the first round being like, we're very excited about the idea of him. Where did I have him? I am going to New Orleans at 23. So
yeah,
I get it. But I also could see him getting out of the first and some team trades up to the early second to try to get him.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be fascinating. I think the back end of this first round is going to be an absolute mess, as it always is. But Rooker, this is a blast as always. You can find him on Twitter at Tyler_Rucker. You can follow me at TMetcalf11. You can find all of our stuff at NoCeilingsNBA.com and NoCeilingsNBA across all socials. In case you missed it, we got some awesome stuff up at the site this week. Make sure to go check out Maxwell's just huge tournament preview in case you missed it. Not too late. Go check it out. Make sure that you're watching who you need to be watching, because there's still a lot of talent in this tournament and in this draft. Corey also put up on Friday his kind of in-person scouting notebook from the Big East tournament. A lot of notes from that. Really awesome experience. So make sure to go kind of check out what he was able to see up close and in person. But if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Till next time, see y'all.